Marie Lu is the number one New York Times bestselling author of the Legend Trilogy and the Young Adults Trilogy. She was on the show with me in 2015 talking about The Rose Society, which is the second book in the Young Adults, in the Young Elite series. Marie graduated from the University of Southern California and jumped into the video game industry, working for Disney Interactive Studios as well as a Flash artist. Her latest, Wild Card, is a sequel to Warcross, which came out last year. We'll talk about that duology, creativity, process, craft, all of it this morning. Marie, welcome back.
Hey, thank you so much for having me back.
Oh, thanks for coming on. So the last time you were on, three short years ago and three long books ago, we we talked a lot about video gaming and your obsession with that, and we were chatting about the possibility of somehow marrying your two passions, gaming and writing. I think actually we were talking more about how to turn your books into games, but Now you've achieved putting gaming into your books. So congratulations. That's really cool.
Thank you so much. Yeah, it's something I've been wanting to write for a while.
Yeah. So I'm going to let you set the stage for these books, assuming some listeners who aren't familiar with them kind of take us into the world of Warcross and Wildcard.
Sure. Warcross and Wildcard are a duology. They are science fiction set in the very near future, so pretty much our present day, and follow the story of what happens when a game called Warcross takes our world by storm. Like, everybody plays this game. It is embedded in virtual reality and augmented reality, and it's basically like a worldwide sensation. So everyone plays. It was invented by a 13-year-old boy named Hideo Tanaka. And as the story opens, he is 21 and kind of like the most famous person in the world. And the story follows a girl named Amika Chen, who is 18 years old and living on her own in New York City, trying to make a living as a bounty hunter and a hacker. She has, you know, no relative to speak of, nobody to fall back on, not really any friends. She's kind of down on her luck. You know, bounty hunting and hacking don't really pay very stable income. You know, it's not like a stable income for her. So she, as the story opens, has like $13 to her name. She's $6,000 in credit card debt. You know, things are not going well for Amika. She's a huge Warcross fan, and she's, you know, followed Hideo's rise in the world since, you know, he first came on the scene, but, you know, she's kind of getting desperate to make some money. She's about to get evicted from her apartment. So she, in desperation, decides to hack into the international championships for Warcross and then accidentally hacks herself into the game. So everyone sees her. And the next day, she is on every headline, the front of every newspaper. Everyone's like, who is Amika Chen? She's got all these journalists, you know, at her front door, and the news are there, and she's, you know, trying to figure out what happens. And then she gets a phone call from Hideo himself, who says, hey, I have a job offer for you. Would you like to hear more? And so from that point on, Amika's life just goes completely off the rails, and she gets swept up into this, you know, the world of glitz and glamour that Warcross is, but also the seedy underbelly of it, the dangerous side, the edgier side, and that's kind of what Wildcard, the second book, delves into, and she kind of has to find her footing and figure out what is morally right for herself. So that's a little bit about the book series. I think it's my favorite thing that I've ever written, so I hope that people enjoy it.
So talk a little bit about how the book presented itself to you. If it was that idea of marrying video gaming and virtual reality, if it was Amika's character, kind of what was, you know, what was the initial spark there?
Yeah, like you said, I had always been interested, you know, in video games. I've always loved it, and I always knew that I was going to write something in the gaming world. You know, I wanted to do that, but I just didn't know what kind of story I wanted to tell. And I was thinking back on the last book in my Legend trilogy, where we get to see a gamified futuristic society that exists in what is future Antarctica. And it's a society that's completely taken over by a game, and that's mentioned very briefly in the Legend series, but I never really got to explore it. So after a while, I kind of got the idea to write a new series based on that idea and expand on it a little bit. So that plus like the recent interest in virtual reality and augmented reality that we've been seeing in the news kind of came together, and that was how I started off with the idea for Warcross.
Talk a little bit about how much research into artificial intelligence this required, and kind of if there were big surprises to you in doing that research, or if you kind of felt the license to, you know, it's fiction, so you can do whatever you want.
A lot of the science fiction in it is not science fiction at all. I did end up doing a lot of reading and research on, you know, on like Wired magazine and that sort of thing, just to see what the current trends are. And part of the challenge of writing this series was that I was writing it so in such a near future sense that I had to know what was happening in real time, and it was really difficult to, you know, keep up with that. So a lot of the science fiction in the book is not really science fiction at all. I think everything has happened already. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of it has come to pass. I get article links all the time from readers who will send me things like, did you know that Elon Musk, you know, created a Neuralink? Like, it's called the Neuralink in my book as well. And he's like, they're like, it's this brain-computer chip interface that they install in your brain that lets you access the internet. I'm like, what? That's really creepy. So it's just been really interesting to see that happen also, in real time and keep up with it.
Yeah. Also creepy that Elon Musk is reading your hard drive, coming up with the same names that you came up with. That's crazy.
I know, right? I was talking to my editor, and I'm like, do we need to change his name? Are we going to get sued?
Right. Did he get there first? Or
right. Yeah, I have no idea.
It's crazy. So I was kind of on this notion of plot versus story. I was talking to a novelist this weekend who was stressing the importance for her of starting with kind of some big question, some either ethical or philosophical question, whatever it was, but that there's some sort of core issue that drives her initial curiosity. And then the book starts to make sense from there, that it kind of dictates who the characters become and how the plot unfolds. And I was kind of wondering, with some of these big questions about, you know, where technology is taking us and our experience of the world is changing so rapidly as we're living more inside our screens, if it was kind of some bigger question that was driving you through this and that kind of dictated your characters, or, you know, kind of if that rang true to you at all, or if you work a different way.
That is so fascinating to hear through her process. I knew that I was going to be putting in a lot of those bigger questions, kind of like the things that have been keeping me up at night about technology and how quickly it's moving, and how we're trying to many times in vain adapt to that speed. And so I knew some of it was going to go into story. I tend to start in a place where I'm just trying to write an entertaining story, and I think a lot of the deeper things, the meatier themes, fall into place as I'm drafting. So it's a more chaotic process for me. I'm not as organized about it as that. Like, I don't tend to know everything that I want to talk about or delve into as the story begins. So for me, it was more about, I really want to make this game, and it sounds so fun, and I want to explore, you know, how Amika reacts to all of it. And then as I'm writing it, all of these thoughts that I've been having will find their way into the story somehow. Mm-hmm. And I go back and read over it for revisions, and I'll see myself trying to come to terms with, you know, questions like, how are we dealing with technology? Like, should we be making this technology? You know, should we be slowing down? Is that even possible? And so it all kind of falls into place as the revisions go on.
Yeah, right. You're so great at world building that isn't boring. Like, you know, I mean, this is so complicated, and it's a game overlaid with virtual reality. But you managed to make it really clear to the reader. And I don't know if there's a way for you to talk about this process for either sci-fi writers or writers that are kind of working in this genre, of how you build these really complicated worlds with complicated rules for readers to understand, or if it's just so kind of organic to your process that there's no way to talk about it. But it's impressive.
You.
Yeah, it's impressive.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad and relieved to hear that it comes across clearly. it kind of comes in piecemeal, too. I think that I use that word a lot when it comes to my writing process. Mm-hmm. It all is kind of chaotic. I think we may have discussed this a while ago before, but I'm kind of a pantser writer. I don't tend to outline my stories out before I begin them, so a lot of it happens as I'm writing, mm-hmm. and that's the same for my world building. I tend to do maybe half of my world building before I begin drafting my story, and then as I'm writing the first draft, the second half of that world building will come in, and I'll realize what I'm missing, like the pieces that I need, you know, to put back into the story, you know, what else I need to know about what characters do in this, you know, in the case of Warcross, inside this game, what's it like to be a champion, you know, what's it like to be famous in the world of Warcross? What is it like to play in the game, and how do you move, and all of these things? Kind of the questions fall into place for me as I'm drafting, because mm-hmm. I realize what's not there. So it all kind of comes in bits and pieces as I go. So it's kind of a chaotic process. I don't know if it's not a terribly organized way of thinking things through, but I think it does help me keep it relatable, at least to myself, which hopefully translates to other readers, because, you know, a lot of the things are not things that I'm familiar with even. You know, I'm not a hacker of any kind. Like, I don't know how to program or any of that. So I'm learning at the same pace as an outsider is. And hopefully that is something that makes it a little bit easier to follow the world, for the readers.
So talk.
I hope that helps.
Yeah, no, that does help. I mean, that does help. I think that's how it happens for a lot of people, is through that horrible, awful revision process of trying to figure out what works and what doesn't, and then smoothing it over. So yeah, mm-hmm. that does make sense. To the point about you learning along with the reader as you go, and we touched a little bit on research before, but was there research in other regards that went into this, that as you're in the revision process, you're finding yourself looking things up and sort of what sort of things were you having to look up?
Oh, all the time. Yeah, I have to stop all the time to do searches. In this case, it was a lot of making sure, like, is this technology already outdated?
Right.
Is there some better thing that people are doing now? I read a lot of TechCrunch, a lot of Wired, and it was kind of harrowing to be like, oh, maybe VR is going to be totally not a thing anymore by the time the book comes out. Are people even going to be talking about augmented reality? It's just so fast. So I did find myself pausing constantly to kind of check on things and see, you know, has anyone invented this thing yet or that thing, and should I be talking about it differently? And it felt like a constant race against reality when I was writing this book.
It's crazy. Brings up the question of whether you see a nearish future about how books are going to be consumed based on where things are going technologically. You know, if mm-hmm. these things are being embedded in our brains as we speak, you know, for mm-hmm. if that's technology already exists, it's mm-hmm. you know, you start wondering if we're just going to be uploading books to our brain pretty soon instead of sitting down and consuming. I mean, we're already having all these conversations about e-readers versus physical hard copy books, and maybe we're just going to jump over that mm-hmm. whole conversation and have them embedded in our brains.
Right.
Wow.
Yeah, it'll be like the Matrix when, you know, in 10 years or so, we just wake up knowing Kung Fu.
Right. Right.
I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see where it goes. I feel like every time I think I've predicted something for what's going to come next in our world, something else comes along where I'm like, I never in a million years would have thought that, you know, this would have taken off, or, you know, now we all take Ubers and Lyfts, and now we all, you know, there's always something that just comes out of nowhere that kind of takes our lives over.
And it's such an accelerated pace. Yeah, yeah.
Exactly, at such an accelerated pace, like every 2 months. 2 months is an eternity in the tech world.
And, you know, we integrate it into our lives so quickly. I mean, we're so adaptable mm-hmm. as humans that mm-hmm. it's, anyway, that's a whole different radio show topic. But so I'll try to stick to the writing part of it. But yeah, it's just fascinating. My guest this morning is Marie Lu. The book is, the first was Warcross. The most current is Wildcard. You're listening to Writers on Writing on KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. So last time we also talked about you doing character sketches in your notebook, like physical drawings of your characters to kind of get the look and feel of them. And I assume you did that this time as well.
I did, yeah, it helped a lot.
I always wondered, after we talked last time, if that helps you. We never really talked kind of about voice creation and finding the voices for all of these characters. And I wonder, for writers who think visually as you do, I don't think like that, but I was thinking that would be a very effective, perhaps, way of getting into a character's voice and distinguishing them from other people, if you could kind of physically see them and spend time with them on paper in a different way, in a visual way, before you start writing their character. And I was wondering if that translates at all to creating their voice and to creating kind of how they talk and see the world.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. That's such a great point, because it really does, for me at least. I think that's a huge part of why I have to draw them out before I ever start writing. It's like I can't get a hold on who that person is until I can see them. Voice is very much a part of that exploration. I'm very chaotic with my writing, but I do tend to write very extensive character profiles before I begin. Mm-hmm. And the character sketches are all a part of that process. So as I go, I learn their voice, and the more I can understand about them, the more I see their, the sketch of their expressions on paper, the better an idea I can have of who this character is. I will also tend to write what I call white room scenes before I begin my first draft, which is where I will take several of my characters and just throw them into a white room and just write dialogue between them just to see what happens between them. Do they get into a fight? Do they fall in love? Does something else spark between them, and that helps me also figure out their voices and how they kind of distinguish from one another, so that I don't have too many of the same kind of character in my cast. So all of that kind of happens before I begin, because that way when I do start my first draft, I do have a good sense of the voice.
That's interesting. How many pages would you say you write that will never see the light of day for the prep work?
Oh gosh, It depends on the book, I guess, but for Warcross, probably a good third.
Wow.
Of the book, I'm sure I have 20 or 30,000 words lying around that are both just notes that I've taken to, for myself, world building and character building, and also scenes that never make it in, outtakes and, random character explorations and that sort of thing.
Right.
So quite a lot.
Quite a lot, yeah. So let's talk a little bit. The last time we talked, we just got started on talking about the importance of writing really bad first drafts. And I wanted to sort of, A, stress again to writers how important just sitting down to writing really bad stuff is. So I was wondering if you could, and we started in on this a little bit, but just give writers a sense of the messiness of this process. If you could talk a little bit about the first draft of either Warcross or Wildcard, what that first thing looked like, what huge things may have changed, where it started versus where it ended, kind of all those, it kind of give us a sense of how much your first draft differed from that last draft.
Oh, sure. Wildcard especially, I think the first draft, a full third of that first draft never made it into the final version of the book. I think the same as with Warcross. It's a pretty standard thing across all of my books. I'd say a full third of it never makes it in. And I'm currently working on a new draft for an upcoming project that's coming out in a couple of years. And it's NaNoWriMo. It's National Novel Writing Month right now. So the goal is to just write 50,000 words of a draft before going back and editing any of it. So that's what I'm doing right now, and it's just awful. I was working on it earlier this morning and thinking to myself, oh my god, this is the worst thing I've ever written. I am truly a fraud. Like, no one is ever going to want to read another book by me again. Like, it's all of those thoughts. And I've had those thoughts since I was an aspiring writer. And I still hate writing bad first drafts. It just feels like you just want to put down the perfect thing, you know, in your first try on the paper. And I just have to come to terms with the fact that it's never going to happen and it's okay. And I just have to get, like, quantity over quality is the goal at this point, right? So I'm going through that process right now and struggling my way through, like, the first third of this new book and just hating everything about this draft. And I know it's bad, but I know that I have to have something to work with, you know, if I'm going to go back and try to make something better. And that's been true for every single one of my books. And they've all gone through that gauntlet. Wildcard was especially hard. It was harder than Warcraft even, just because it was the ending of a duology. I had written a duology before. I didn't realize that you have to tie up everything in basically the end of the second book, which I've never done, and that was a challenge in itself. So it's always a struggle, and I hope that's kind of inspiring in its own way for aspiring writers, because, you know, pretty much every writer I know, no matter how successful, struggles with that first draft.
I know. I was just having a conversation. Well, Andre Debus was on last week, and he said the same thing. He was like, I just think this is the worst thing I've ever written. I don't know. And I said, God, how long do you have to write before you have some confidence in what you've written? And the answer is forever.
It's just forever.
So the last time you were on, we must have a thing about second books here, because the last time you were on for The Rose Society, which was the second in the Young Elites trilogy. And you were talking then about, you know, just how dreadful it is to write the seconds are just so very difficult. And, you know, you have painted perhaps yourself in a corner from whatever you wrote in the first book. Right. And I was wondering if, which it sounds like you alluded to, that this was just as painful as The Rose Society.
Oh, yeah. And part of the reason why I thought it was going to be easier was that, you know, I was choosing to write a duology this time. And I was like, oh, this is great. I hate writing the second book in a trilogy, so this way I just skip it. But it turns out that the second book in the duology is basically books 2 and 3 mushed together into one book, so you have to do twice the work in half the time, and you have to tie it over again. So, you know, I kind of screwed myself over on that one.
How many pages are you putting out a day? Because you're putting out a book a year, and you're throwing a third of a book away each time you write a book. So I'm just wondering how you just must be a machine over there.
I wish I was. That would be awesome if there was a machine. But I, in general, I don't think of myself as a terribly fast writer, actually. I know a lot of people who can write, you know, 4,000, 5,000 words a day, and I don't think I've ever been able to do that in a day. So I'm doing NaNoWriMo, so if I can get 1,500 to 2,000 words a day, I think that's a phenomenal day for me. That's a lot for me, and so it'll take me 2 to 3 months to get a really, really, really rough first draft down, and then another at least half a year of making sure that that's polished. So my books are kind of staggered a year out, and I'm turning in the first draft of a book about a year before it comes out, and all that rest of that time is revision. That's how long it takes for me to actually polish it into something that people can read.
Right.
So it's not terribly fast, but I'm trying to keep up with it and trying to always find new ways of making my writing more efficient.
Have you noticed that the YA world, I mean, the technology world is changing so incredibly fast? And I was wondering if the YA world, because your teenage audience is so enmeshed in, you know, in that technological world, I was wondering if that work, or if your audience, if you have noticed changes in them since you've been in the business.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I don't know if similar things happen in adults or in the younger categories, like picture books or middle grade, but in young adult, you know, when I first came out, it was right around the time when The Hunger Games was on its way up. And I feel like the YA industry was incredibly different at that time. You know, we were all kind of wrapped up in dystopia, and there was this new wave, like a trend hitting the market, and it was a very different time, I think, in terms of what readers were drawn to. And, you know, I think that YA today, as it stands, it's aged up in general. I think that YA themes have gotten older, mm-hmm. And the storylines have gotten older. And not necessarily a bad thing, it's just very different from, you know, what was considered YA when I first entered and what's considered YA now. So I think it has to do with the aging of our audience too. A lot of readers who were teenagers when I first began writing are now, you know, in their 20s and still reading YA and still enjoying it, and they have very different needs, you know, from the genre. And at the same time, you know, there's new young people coming into the category and exploring what's out there, and they live in a time that is different from what things were like in 2011. And like you said, technology has changed so much in that span of time. Like, Instagram didn't exist yet when I first started writing, and now it's basically all that I use. And, you know, young people use, I mean, even that's changed now. They used to use Snapchat or Snap, and now they've kind of switched over to using Instagram stories. And it's just a lot of that change, you know, you can kind of feel it rippling through the YA industry as a whole, because, you know, we're trying to write stories for this very, very rapidly changing group of young people, and trying to still find, you know, those kernels that will resonate no matter what kind of technology is out there. And so it's a challenge every year, I think, but always fun. It's I've never been bored trying to find the right stories for young people.
Well, and to your earlier point about the world that these kids are in, you know, when you were writing in 2011, I mean, the political world was so much different. So dystopia probably had far more appeal than now. I'm sure kids are like, I don't need any more dystopia. I can just turn on the TV. Now I'd rather escape. And so virtual reality is actually very nice.
Exactly. Yeah, it's just mind-boggling how different the political landscape is. Midterms are tomorrow, and I can't even imagine what it must be like being a young person today, seeing the political landscape, dystopia landscape that we live in.
Seriously. You're the master of this genre, but I wonder if there are other writers that you recommend people who are working in this genre look at for skilled writing. Kind of, who are your contemporaries that you really admire?
Oh, there's so many. Leigh Bardugo is one of the most talented YA authors, and authors in general, working, you know, in writing today. She writes the Grishaverse book. Her first series starts with Shadow and Bone, and her second one is a duology that starts with Six of Crows, and it's just one of my favorite fantasies out there. She's incredibly smart. Her writing is so sharp, and her characters are so well-built. Her worlds are so rich. I think that she is her writing is a masterclass for all writers. So I would highly, highly recommend if writers have not read her books before to take the time to read them and study them and just enjoy them. They are incredibly great reads. Saba Tahir is an incredible writer who writes fantasy as well. Her series, An Ember in the Ashes, is just beautiful, sweeping, dark, epic. And has a lot of lessons in it for pacing and for how to build your characters quickly and sympathize with them and, you know, take everything away from them and make your readers angst. She's incredibly good at that. Tahta Mafi is one of my favorite people and also one of the most talented writers I know. She can switch seamlessly between, you know, writing dystopia. Her dystopian series is called Shatter Me, and writing for middle grade. She writes this beautiful middle grade duology called Furthermore. And now she's written a contemporary novel that just came out and was long listed for the National Book Award, called A Very Large Expanse of Sea. She's just an incredible writer. I would highly, highly recommend everyone check her out. There's so many writers. I could go on and on.
That's great.
Angie Thomas, of course, with The Hate U Give, is one of our most powerful voices right now in the industry. And, you know, if you haven't read The Hate U Give, definitely recommend that that book, because she is just a powerhouse already. It's really, really incredible to watch her work and her rise. So yeah, I mean, we could be here all day. I will list out so many writers, but
that's
a handful off the top of my head. Yeah.
That's a perfect start. Are you going to have any hand in doing any of the screenplays for, I know some of these books are coming out as movies. Do you have any, I mean, you're such a visual writer. It just seems like it would be a natural fit for you.
Thank you. I would love to try writing a screenplay someday. It's such a different medium. I'm very intimidated by it, but I would love that chance. Right now, the screenplays for Legend and for The Young Elites were written by someone else. So I did have a hand in consulting on those and tried to give as much advice and suggestions as I could to the writers for the world building and for the characters. But I haven't written one on my own yet. I would love to someday. It's just one of those things where I have to sit down and really educate myself on how to do it.
Right. We're out of time. Were there things we should have talked about that we didn't talk about? Anything you want?
No, this was so fun.
Anything you want to get in there that we forgot?
I had a great time.
I did too.
I think your questions were so great. Yeah, I had so much fun talking with you, and you know, just like the first time, I'm just so glad that we had a chance to catch up again.
I was going to say, we'll do it again. We'll do it again. There'll be another book soon,
yeah,
so I'll look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thank you.